Thursday, May 2nd, 2019. This is the Hermetic Hour. I'm your host, Pope Runyon. And tonight, we present the official vision and mission statement of the Church of the Hermetic Sciences and its fraternal order, the Order of the Temple of Astarte. This is the same document that is in our training manual and is delivered to new initiates when they begin training. It gives our history, our philosophy, our traditional initiatory system, our accomplishments, our special programs, yoga, visualization, ceremonial magic, alchemy, divination, soul travel, and celestial Kabbalah. And as a bonus feature tonight, we will discuss the mystery of the pagan communion set and the mysterious magical alphabet inscribed thereon. And we will direct you to our website where you can see it and perhaps help us solve the mystery. So join with us and get magical. Now, we haven't done anything like this in quite a while, but I just started a new class for beginners just this last weekend, and we read this, and I thought that this would be good, seeing as how this new class is starting. This would be good to read it on the Hermetic Hour, and so the new members can listen, and all of our guest listeners can listen also. So this will give you an introduction to the Church of the Hermetic Sciences and the Order of the Temple of Astarte. Nos cete ipsum, know thyself. The Church of the Hermetic Sciences was incorporated in California in 1971. The Church sponsors a religious fraternal order, the Ordo Templi Astartes, or the Order of the Temple of Astarte, which was founded the year before in 1970. Both the Church and the Order trace their spiritual origins to the near-death visionary experience of Carol Polk Runyon, that's myself, in the year 1969. I was an artist and a writer of adventure fiction, and I suffered from a totally atrophied gallbladder that had been misdiagnosed as an ulcer. And at that time, ulcers were thought to be psychosomatic, so I attempted to heal myself by self-hypnosis and yoga. Now, these mind-over-body experiments led me into an intensive study of Eastern and Western occultism. And while my physical condition deteriorated and my efforts to exert mind over matter intensified until I crossed the threshold of deep psychic awareness, I discovered, or perhaps rediscovered, the lost secret of how ancient magicians had summoned spirits to visible appearance in dark mirrors and had conversations with them. Now, this method employed the unique phenomenon of facial distortion that occurs when staring at one's reflection in a mirror under low-light conditions. The startling visual transformation into an alien visage with the accompanying change in personality was already known to Eastern adepts as a method of manifesting previous incarnations, and to African practitioners as a way of contacting their ancestors. Some Western occultists were using it for the same purposes, but my study of Carl Jung and the Hebrew Kabbalah led me to the realization that Aleister Crowley had been almost correct when he stated that the spirits of the Goetia are portions of the human brain. Now, he should have said the spirits of the Goetia were aspects of the human mind, and thus their identity can be reflected in the mirror of magic in a distortion of one's own facial reflection. I applied the principles of Hermetic philosophy along with Carl Jung's concept of archetypes in a universal collective unconscious to this process and discovered that we could reach back into the deepest recesses of our minds and call forth the 72 rebellious spirits of King Solomon's legendary brass vessel. Now, these genii, according to Hebrew and Arabian lore, had aided the biblical King Solomon in building his great temple. The philosophical and psychological analogy behind this was quite obvious. The brass vessel, that's the brass vessels where you contain the sigils of the spirits, is the human mind, and the temple is the great work that the rebellious spirits, which are components of the universal and individual mind, are compelled to accomplish. Now, further research revealed that medieval Arabian magicians had used the same mirror method for evoking spirits, but they concealed the actual process by claiming that a mist formed between the seer and the mirror. According to the biblical allegory, wise King Solomon united all the peoples of the Holy Land in one great effort to erect a temple to the supreme and ineffable God, who was worshipped under several names by Jews, Israelites, Canaanites, Phoenicians, and Amorites alike. This was a perfect example of the Hermetic philosophy of one ultimate God who permeates and animates all things. When Solomon called upon Hiram of Tyre, a Phoenician priest king, to help him build the great temple, King Hiram said, "Praise the Lord!" Now, this Lord that King Hiram the Phoenician was praising was known as El. That name El, that same El who was the most high god of Hiram's ancient predecessor, the Canaanite priest king Melchizedek. Now, it was this Melchizedek, the righteous, who gave the patriarch Abraham his original dispensation through the first Eucharist of bread and wine. Judaism, Christianity, and Islam all claim descent from Abraham. Jesus of Nazareth was thrice declared by Paul to have been a priest after the order of Melchizedek. Thus, Melchizedek's most high God, El, the Compassionate, is the original heavenly father of all three of the world's great monotheistic religions. The son of El was Jehovah, or Yahweh. The son of Jehovah, according to the Christians, was Jesus of Nazareth. We hold that Jesus of the house of David and Solomon considered his father to have been the original El, and thus Jesus was declared a priest after the original order of Melchizedek. The daughter of El was the goddess Astarte, who was venerated by King Solomon. Thus we find that Mary Magdalene was the bride of Jesus and the last priestess of Astarte. King Solomon's temple for all Israel, including the Phoenicians, reconciles all differences between the three great biblical religions of today for those who are enlightened enough to perceive the sublime truth in the allegory of wise King Solomon and his friend and ally, King Hiram of Tyre, both working together to build a temple to the God they worship by different names and in different ways. But with one God, we are still left with the problem of patriarchal imbalance. El is masculine, and yet the most ancient holy books, the pre-biblical tablets of Ugarit and Rashomra, we find El ruled jointly with his consort, Lady Asherat of the Sea, who may be considered the feminine aspect. From the Book of Kings, we learn that King Solomon built a temple to the goddess Astarte. Thus, Solomon the Wise balanced the masculine and feminine archetypes. Astarte was the goddess of love and fertility, the very necessary female component in an otherwise unbalanced religious equation. Her traditional consort was Prince Baal, the Ear King. He was the sacrificed god of the most ancient traditions and the original horned god of the earliest Neolithic hunting and agricultural cults. His yearly death and rebirth was one of the earliest of many resurrection myths. Inspired by this, I chose Thabaon as my magical name. Now, Thabaon, having been the first hierophant of the ancient Phoenicians, according to the philosopher Sancho Nieto. Now, after reading Jesse Weston's From Ritual to Romance, I realized that Baal and Astarte of ancient Canaan were in a direct line of dying gods and their resurrecting goddesses, beginning in the Bronze Age and culminating in the advent of Jesus and Mary Magdalene at the beginning of the Common Era. And the From Ritual to Romance is based on a Gnostic document called the Nessaean document. So there's a Gnostic component in this, very definitely. And we could say that Jesus and Mary were Valentinian Gnostic Christians, and so are we. For Roman Catholics, the Virgin Mary has assumed the role of the Divine Feminine. For Jewish people, the Shekinah is God's female manifestation. But these are both later developments that came long after the time of Solomon. And it was these two ancient archetypes, Baal and Astarte, that I had first contacted in my dark mirror experiments, because they were, Baal and Astarte were, Baal and Astaroth, the so-called demons of the Goetia. They had been transformed into demons. They subsequently inspired me to research and create a modern hermetic rendition of their ancient religion, the religion of King Hiram of Tyre, and, if we are to believe the Bible, the religion that was honored by King Solomon himself. Now, we needed an initiatory framework for the Order of the Temple of Astarte, so I consulted another work, The History and Practice of Magic, by the French author Paul Christian, from which we adopted Christian's Mysteries of the Pyramids as a ceremonial entry into the OTA. Now, we soon discovered that this initiation, which Paul Christian had attributed to Imbleachus, was actually a one-degree epitome of a 1770s German paramasonic seven-degree system called Kraterrapoa, which was supposed to be based on the Hermetic mystery schools of Greco-Egyptian Alexandria. Now, we soon expanded our one-degree version into a full seven-degree system, adjusting the Greco-Egyptian symbolism to accommodate our Solomonic Phoenician tradition, calling the resultant hybrid the Kraterrapoa Reformato. Now, while studying for my master's degree in cultural anthropology at California State University, Northridge, I completed the four pageants that comprise the seasonal rites of Baal and Astarte. And since 1974, these four religious dramas have been performed each year upon the solstices and the equinoxes by members of the church and the order. They symbolize the four primal operations of spiritual alchemy, culminating in the sacred marriage of springtime. Starting in summer with the purification through sacrifice, calcination, the resurrection of the spirit in the fall, solution, and the victory over chaos with the sun's return in the dead of winter and separation. We culminate this cycle of seasonal rites with conjunction in our communion of the elements ceremony, and this is a solemn Eucharist of seven sacraments: incense, fire, honey liquor, bread, salt, oil, and the kiss of love, the kiss of agape, symbolizing the sacred marriage and vernal equinox. This perfectly relates to the Valentinian Gnostic Christian concept of the sacred marriage. You'll find that described in the Gospel of Philip. Of Christ and his priestess bride being the true passion, not the crucifixion in Valentinian Christianity. This ceremony was administered by our ancient mentor, Marcus the Valentinian, who carried the Holy Grail to southern France and was the father of the Greek Kabbalah. We have recovered Marcus's secret key linking the Kabbalah to the celestial sphere and the constellations in a system we call the Soma Sophia. And we believe that this was the origin of Dee and Kelly's elemental watchtowers of the universe tablets. We also venerate and invoke the traditional archangels common to Judeo-Christian and Islamic lore: Raphael, Michael, Gabriel, and Uriel. These mighty and powerful beings of light are evoked through the rediscovery of another ancient secret of magic, the art of scrying in the crystal globe. We attribute them to the hermetic philosophical elements of air, fire, water, and earth, and we visualize them as male and active elements and female as passive elements. And they are personified representatives of the fourfold name of God, which we derive from the three mother letters of the Kabbalah. We do not use the Hebrew tetragrammaton in respect to those who consider it proprietary, and because we consider the mother letters to be more appropriate. Our fourfold name of God derives from the creative principle outlined in the Kabbalistic cube of space. Of all our contributions to the Western, before I get into that, let me mention this. The Samaritans, to this day, have an earlier tradition and a more ancient tradition of this than the Orthodox Judeans. And when a Sumerian priest sees YHVH in his Torah as he's reading it to his congregation, he pronounces it Shema. And those are the three mother letters, the Sefer Yetzirah. And if you think I'm trying to slide something on you, I suggest that you go ahead and look that up and confirm it. Of all our contributions to the Western tradition, one of the most important is our unique conception of a complete straight line Kabbalistic chakra. Chakra system, which follows the Golden Dawn's middle pillar exercise. This configuration was also inspired by the German philosopher Johann Gichtel's Natural Man engraving and the Golden Dawn's diagram of the flaming sword on the Tree of Life, and also the works of Jacob Worm and Flood. And now Western students of the magical art can internalize their entire symbolic microcosmic universe along the spine in the same manner as the Eastern adepts in a practice similar to that of Tibetan Tantric Buddhists. with their many pagan god forms. Now, we internalize the ancient gods and goddesses of pre-biblical Canaan, all as aspects of Father El and Mother Asherah. This capability directly empowers Western practitioners with all the techniques and powers of the Eastern Tantric Yoga. I confirmed the perfect and perfected this marriage of Eastern and Western magic through a year of intensive initiations and training with the Sakya order of Tibetan Tantric Buddhism. The archangels of the Kabbalah and the gods and goddesses of our ancient Phoenician pantheon are brought to vivid and vibrant life in these internal chakras, or mystic roses, as we prefer to call them. However, the student is always aware that the angels are specialized messengers of God, and that pagan gods and goddesses are greater personifications of natural forces and human desires, of which elementals are the lesser personifications. We might say that our mission is to offer the best techniques and processes of ancient and modern Hermetic Rosicrucian, classical and neo-pagan magical traditions in a unique American system of Hermetic magical empowerment and spiritual enlightenment for those hardy romantics who still believe that magic works and that it is the most powerful creative force in the universe, which is the human imagination, and that our magic is Western culture's preeminent spiritual art form. Well, that, of course, that concludes the mission statement, but I'd like to mention a couple of other accomplishments that we've made. We managed to unravel and discover the secret behind the chemical wedding of Christian Rosenkreutz, which is the third ancient document of the Rosicrucian tradition, and so we have that. We uncovered the symbolism behind it, and have perfected that. And in our highest degrees in the Krata Rapoa, we call upon the medieval German Parseval of Wolfram von Eschenbach and his very spiritual and hermetic concept of the holy nature of the Holy Grail. Yes, it's Christian and pagan, and it perfectly fits with Valentinian Gnostic Christianity, and also with the idea of the ministry of Marcus in southern France. It all ties together, and of course it ties together with Joseph of Arimathea in Britain and the entire Arthurian legend. And so Parseval is perhaps the most esoteric of all of the Grail romances, and that's very definitely a part of our tradition, and perfectly blends with the Krata Rapoa, especially in the seventh degree. Now, I mentioned in the beginning that we had a mysterious relic. Now, this mysterious relic is a neo-pagan, what appears to be a tray and glasses of some sort of a communion set. There are six little glasses with leather sleeves around them, and in a tray, which is leather. All this is handmade, by the way, and very old. It's obviously over 50 years old. One of our friends, not a member, but a friend, bought this at a swap meet in our canyon, Silverado Canyon. That's a swap meet, and he bought it from a lady at that with a trading table at the swap meet, and she said that she thought it was Wiccan, but she wouldn't say any more than that, and apparently didn't know any more than that about it. The little glasses, the six little glasses in this tray, have these little leather sleeves around them, and very well made, and they're inscribed with strange characters, and then it sits in a tray with a six-sided tray about 10 inches long and 5 inches across, and which also has six more of these strange characters around it. Now, these characters, they kind of resemble Enochian, but they're not Enochian, and they're very strange looking characters. They somewhat resemble astrological signs, but not exactly. And naturally, we have quite a library of books on magical alphabets. One of the best ones is Jeffrey James's Angel Magic. And so we have, you know, quite a collection of angelic alphabets. And so after we acquired this relic, I naturally, got out all the books on magical alphabets that we had, including Agrippa, and went through them. And I found that these characters, they kind of look like old Armenian, like the old Armenian alphabet, a little bit like that, and they're a little bit like an alphabet that Dante once used, an angelic alphabet, and one that Jonathan Swift came up with, and even resembled one that the French aviator mystic this Saint-Exupéry. He had one similar to this, but I can't identify any one particular character with any of these alphabets. So what we've done is Serge Andrea photographed the setup, and I had inscribed all the letters in a separate piece of parchment paper, so that it was easy, you could identify the letters. It's kind of difficult to read them on the leather, although we did we photographed them well, but I have them all. I have the characters copied down on a separate sheet, and we put the photograph of the relic and the sheet with the characters on our website, and we put it on the public page. So those of you who are not members, you can see it, and you can go there. And of course, naturally, we want you to read the sidebar over there, and talks about how to join the associate member program when you go look at the relic. But we also want your help in deciphering this relic. You know, this could be a divination set. It doesn't have to be. My first thought was that it was some kind of a little communion set for some sacramental communion. It could be that, but it could also be some sort of divination paraphernalia. I don't know, but it's a fascinating mystery. And it's a fascinating, strange alphabet. So it's there on our website, and I want all of you that are interested in solving the mystery and helping us solve it, or those of you who like a mystery like this, to go visit our website, take a look at it. And that's chsota.org. That's simple. Just chsota.org. That'll get you there. Take a look.
and let us know, you know, if you've got any ideas that about what it is, let us know, and we'll be, you know, we're going to solve the mystery one way or the other. Now, make something worthwhile here in the rest of the time we have. Let me get into something that we have not done on the Hermetic Hour before, and that's the temple opening, the way we open the temple and the order of the temple of Astarte. Now, Pastor Foray should master the invoking pentagram ritual, which is found in the Book of Solomon's Magic, and they should also learn the invocation of the archangels of the four quarters, and also that which is also in TBOSM, which is the way we refer to the Book of Solomon's Magic. They should also learn and practice our temple opening, which follows below. And this is in a dark temple. And the priestess in the west says, "In the name of Raphael, Lord of the Air and Master of the Twice-Forked Sword, let there be light in the east." And the acolyte goes around to the east and lights the candle next to the archangel Raphael. And the priest or the acolyte lights Raphael, and the priest rings the bell. And the priest in the east then says, "In the name of Gabrielle, Lady of the Waters and Mistress of the Holy Grail, let there be light in the west." And the acolyte goes around to the west and lights the light on Gabrielle and rings the bell. By the way, we have our angels, our icons, and it's nice we have them in little kind of sort of open birdhouses hanging on the walls of the temple with a little candle holder underneath them, and that's very nice. And you can do that if you get the copy of the Book of Solomon's Magic. You can make color copies out of those. You can do that. However, we have been doing this for so long that the rest of the magical community has kind of picked up on it. And so, if you have an inner source catalog, you will find statues of these four Hermetic archangels in the proper genre, because Gabriel and Oriel should be female, and Raphael and Mikael are male. And you'll find these statues that they have, and they're very nice. And so that's the inner source. So if you want to do that. Now, by the way, also we use a lighter. We use a typical Catholic Church lighter snuffer, one with this. And also we use it to light the altar. And the priestess in the west then says, "In the name of Mikael, Lord of the Fire and Master of the Sacred Lens, let there be light in the south." And so the acolyte goes around to the south and lights the fire in the south, and the priest rings the bell. And the priest in the east then says, "In the name of Ariel, Lady of the Earth and Mistress of the Brazen Shield, let there be light in the north and upon the table of art." And so the acolyte goes around, he lights Ariel, and then he turns around and he lights the candles on the altar, the four candles on the altar surrounding the crystal ball, if we're in fact doing an invocation, an invocation operation. And then the priest says, "And upon the shrine of Our Lady Astarte." And then he turns and he reverently lights the candle on the shrine of Our Lady Astarte, and we should have, in that case, a little shrine with a statue of the goddess Astarte, and Eternal Source, that the same catalog, they also have a little statue of Astarte if you want to get one. And now we ring the bell. And this is, gradually what this is doing is it's illuminating the temple. Because we start off in a dark temple with this, we illuminate the temple. And then the priest in the east says, "What is the key?" And everybody says, "As above, so below." And the priest says, "What is the creed?" And we all do the signs at this point and say, "To know, to dare, to will, and to keep silence." And the priestess in the west says, "What's the secret of the way?" And we all say, "In your temple, you are one of the gods." And the priest and the priestess in unison make the signs and say, "Atak, Yiborli, Alam Adonai, the temple is, or hinge, is open." And the priest hits the gong three times. The temple closing is exactly the reverse. "Thanks be to Gabriel, that darkness descends in the west." And, of course, this lighter snuffer that the acolyte has a little snood on it so he can go over and extinguish the candle in front of the angel. And the priestess says, "Thanks to Mikael, let the darkness descend to the south." And the same thing, he goes around to the south and extinguishes it. I'm turning pages in the training manual here as I'm doing this. "Thanks be to Oriel, that darkness descend to the north." And then the priestess says, "Thanks be to Raphael, that darkness descend in the east." And upon the table of art, and upon the shrine of Our Lady Astarte, we extinguish the candle or the icon, the candles on the altar, and the candles on the shrine. And the priest and priestess bring the sign of closing down. "Atak, Yiborli, Olam Adonai, the work is finished, the temple is closed." The acolyte strikes the gong or rings the bell thrice. So, that closes the temple. And as we close the temple, that is a good time to bring our session to a close. And remember, next week we'll be back with another exposition of hermetic secrets or knowledge, that will be of interest to those of you who follow our tradition and others. And remember now that. We have that mystery on the website that we want you to look at. So go there to chsota.org and take a look at the mysterious neo-pagan relic, and give us your opinion if you have any idea of what it is and what it's used for and what tradition it hails from. We would certainly like to know. And meanwhile, good magic, and we'll see you next week.